If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rolling right is Bortles. Fires it to Mahanan into the end zone. Touchdown.
Palmer's going to work out of the gun. Sets and throws. Hit as he does. It's picked off by the Lions. Kill him from the other side. 20. Kill him from 15. Way to him. He's gone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby.
Ryan's going to have some time.
Now going to sail it wide open. Hooper. 50-yard line. Austin Hooper, bare 40. Stiff arm at the 30. Keeps his feet. Hooper 10, 5, touchdown Atlanta.
Four-man rush. Dalton throws toward the sideline. It's intercepted. And Andy Dalton has equaled his career high. He's been picked off four times on opening day.
Carr going to throw for the end zone. Touchdown, Raiders.
This one left side. It's plucked out of the air. Intercepted far sideline. LaMarcus Joyner. Touchdown, L.A.
Rodgers takes the snap. The flag does come in. So Rodgers has a free shot, and he throws it over the middle and completes it in the end zone to Jordy Nelson.
The game is over. Cowboys with the victory tonight, 19-3. They start 1-0. They break a three-game losing streak at the hands of the New York Giants, who start the season 0-1.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. Oh my God, great week one, guys. A week one where, just to give my first initial thoughts, there's been a lot of people being negative about quarterback play. It was a week where a lot of teams ended up with sub 300 yards, a very defensive week of football. But I think that's being incredibly disrespectful to a whole bunch of number one overall picks in Matt Stafford, Alex Smith, in Sam Bradford last night on Monday Night Football, and in Jared Goff, all four of whom were probably the four best quarterbacks in football this week, and all of whom at some point have been called a bust for being picked number one overall. So do you know what? I thought there was some great quarterback play this week. Matt Sherry and Ollie Hunter on with us to react to all the week one action. And coming up on this show, if you've not been playing Madden yet, if you've not played Long Shot yet, you might not be aware of the story of Devin Wade and Colts, the Colt missile cruise. We have J.R. Lemon and the one and only Scott Porter joined me in the studio on Monday for a good 20 minutes of chat about football, about Madden. We talked Friday Night Lights.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
Is it coming back, Will? Is it coming back?
Well, this is...
Ruin the tease, man. Will we find out if it's coming back?
I actually have a bit of breaking and slightly devastating Friday Night Lights.
Oh, don't do this to me, man.
That was discussed off air. Just as the new season gets underway and you're thinking to yourself, wow, there's so much football to fill my life, because CBS are launching their, or NBC or whoever it is, are launching their own on-demand service in the US next month, Friday Night Lights will not be on Netflix anymore from October 1st.
Clear eyes,
so if you want to re-watch Friday Night Lights, you need to do it in the next 3.5 weeks.
I mean, of course, there are many other ways that you can re-watch it.
But yeah, it was a really great chat, so we'll have that coming up for you as well. And J.R. Lemon, Ollie, just so you know, former Stanford Cardinals running back. He first got involved in doing Madden because he did get in-game capture for them. So, you know, where they get the players and they get them doing movement. And then he's gone on to be a TV actor, and that's how he ended up getting this job. But yeah, talked all about Christian McCaffrey with him. We got into the white running backs debate. I mean, J.R. Lemon, who is a black running back, talking about how he thinks Christian McCaffrey is disrespected as a white running back. It's a really, really good conversation. I really enjoyed it. So that's all coming for you as well.
Clearly a very intelligent dude as well.
Do you know what? I can't wait to download at Gridiron. Love it.
Yeah, there you go. Although, of course, the people who would have... I don't know. Anyway, carry on. Guys, I think like what we'll do, because we're doing this on Tuesday rather than doing our usual Monday night stuff, let's talk about the two Monday night football games, and then we'll get back into the Sunday night football after we've had our Madden chat. Everyone happy with that?
Happy with that.
Yeah. Now, and there's so much to get into. I mean, is there anything anyone wants to share from their personal lives at the top of the show before we get into the football?
No, let's get into the football.
I've got a really bad cold, but other than that, there's really nothing happening.
I don't think anyone would tell the difference, Sherry.
My wife's just returned to work from maternity leave. People don't give a shit, and rightly so.
Matt Sherry, this is Michael Jordan, game six. You've got the flu, but you're going to push through and have an MVP-type performance, right?
That's what I'm hoping. It would be my first in about 300 shows, so that would be nice.
he saves it for the NFL show.
obligatory plug, listen to us on TalkSport and TalkSport 2 every Sunday night. But also, 2 weeks' time, first game at Wembley. Second game at Wembley, it's 3 weeks' time. What am I on about? The first game at Wembley is in 2 weeks' time. That's Jags-Ravens. That's going to be great. In 3 weeks' time, it's the second game at Wembley. Dolphins-Saints. It is still happening at Wembley, despite the Miami Dolphins asking to have the game moved back to Miami. Don't worry about that. It's still coming to London. And after that game, at Bloomsbury Lanes, our home away from home, we are throwing another international series celebration game to celebrate the new series, to celebrate the games coming over to London. Red Zone on every single screen with the audio and everything happening. There are, if you want to come and watch an individual game, there are three VIP rooms available as well, so you can come and you can do that and set up your own game pass on the screens in those rooms. But entry to the party, free shot of Jameson on entry, free copy of the latest edition of Gridiron magazine. It's just £10 to come down. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant night. There's only about 300, 350 tickets, and they're already selling really well. So get to gridiron-magazine.com or check out our Twitter account. Get your tickets. Come down to our London game after party because it's going to be awesome.
Couldn't have said it better. And what we won't do this year is turn off Red Zone when there's key things happening. Never again, guys.
We had a deal in place with the UK Packers that we had to show their game, but that's not happening again. Just to be incredibly clear on that.
Never again.
And I'm a Packers fan. That should never happen again. I'd like to apologise. Not on behalf of the UK Packers. I have no affiliation with them. They are great guys. But I'd just like to apologise on behalf of Gridiron.
That's fine.
Yeah. Well, everyone now knows that it won't happen again. Red Zone all night and individual games if you want them in the VIP suites.
Find out more information at
gridiron-magazine.com. Let's get into the games. Let's get into Monday Night Football. Let's work backwards chronologically as icing the kicker finally worked in a game of football. Broncos block Koo's late field goal to top the Chargers 24-21. Vance Joseph getting the victory in the battle of the two new head coaches in the battle of the AFC West in what up until the fourth quarter was a game where the Los Angeles Chargers were struggling to get things going. Two late turnovers, turning those turnovers into touchdowns. Great pass rush all over the field. This was the best second game of a Monday night doubleheader I can remember.
It was awesome. Really, really awesome. And I was so excited when that guy made the kick and then heartbroken later on. It often works out, that especially if you've had not as many close games, that towards the end of the week, the NFL always rounds round to hit an amazing game at the end, and that's what we got here.
What's really interesting is, I don't know if you saw, there's an interview with Derek Wolfe after the game, where the guy who eventually got his hand on the block was Shelby Harris, a third-year lineman, a guy who's a rotation guy, basically. On the first version of the kick, Derek Wolfe had managed to get a bull rush and almost got a block in himself. He went and told Shelby Harris, if you make that move, you'll be able to get a block in. They'll be watching for me now after the first kick. You go and do it. Shelby Harris did it, got the block in. I love little details like that that come from on the field. And it was a great way to end the game, even if, like, at 6:15 in the morning, I was kind of looking forward to overtime.
Yeah, it was awesome.
In terms of the performance on the field, Menelik Watson, you know, let's we always want to back him because he's a Brit, but he had a really, really rough night up against that pass rush for the Chargers. And what I'd say is, you know, a 3-point loss, getting those two turnovers, the four sacks, two of which from Melvin Ingram, there was a lot of positivity for the Chargers. Their backfield played well. I thought that Melvin Gordon, like the difference between his rookie season and where he's at now, he picked up some amazing blitz pass blocks late in the game. He was coming out of the backfield. Like, he is the prime example of a running back who came out of college without really knowing how to work an NFL system and has just developed in a brilliant way. And I now think has the possibility to be a top five running back.
I think he could be the best running back in the NFL this year, especially the way that they're going to use him in that system. Because he's going to get loads of carries. They're clearly keen to use him in the passing game as well. There was a great play in the second half, I think it was, where actually Rivers should have thrown the ball to him earlier. He'd gone on the wheel route and he was wide open, but then Rivers got flushed out to the right. And Gordon, like an experienced wide receiver, ran back and took a great catch on the sideline. So I think there's huge potential there. I always think in the NFL, 3 points is basically home field advantage. So if you lose by 3 points in Denver on opening night of Monday Night Football, that is literally as tough. I love that, Ellie. As tough a road game as you can have, because that stadium is crazy. I've experienced it at an AFC Championship game, and it sounded the same last night. So I thought there were lots of positives for the Chargers, particularly with the way they kind of stuck in there and battled throughout the game.
I totally agree with you, Sherry. I remember that play, him coming back, and he also managed to get his feet back in bounds as well, which is really impressive, something that you would see a little slot wide receiver or even a big wide receiver do. I quite liked what Rivers was doing. There were a couple of times, like you said just then, and another one where he threw short, I think on the final drive or very late on in the game, where he was rushed. And I think that could be either to do with time, I'm catching up on him a little bit of a opening night stuff as well.
Opening night.
But the throw to Benjamin was perfect. He made some other really good throws, nice decisions, especially with Keenan Allen back, and it's great to see him back on the scoreboard
and
as well.
And he was good, wasn't he? Yeah. Keenan Allen was really good against that secondary to make some of the plays he did was a massively positive sign as well.
And with
also
the
penalty against Keenan Allen on that touchdown was absolute nonsense, by the way.
Yeah.
Absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
From a Denver perspective, not only did we see that their defense, without Shane Ray, they still managed to pick up and have a pretty decent game. Who was playing off? Shaq Barrett playing off the other side.
Shaq Barrett's good, isn't he?
He had a really good game, Shaq Barrett, last night, and obviously you've got Von Miller on the other side. The secondary, what I was surprised about, and I talked about this on the previous show, is I didn't know how Vance Joseph would work with that team, considering he's someone who's always worked with a zone scheme, and the Broncos are so man heavy in terms of their corners. But they just went out and did what they've done for the last few years and did it really well early on. And yes, the Chargers got back into the game, but the Broncos offense, right? We were all worried that they weren't going to be explosive enough. I thought Simeon had a really good game before the turnovers late. CJ Anderson, 80 yards on the ground off 20 carries. Jamaal Charles, if you take away the fumble, looked really explosive in big moments. And again, the receiving core all had some really decent games as well. So, you know, I actually think the Broncos are a team who, okay, it's only week one, but that of all the units this week that have surprised me, and we'll talk about the Cowboys defense at some point as well, that's one that really caught my eyes, me saying, okay, better than I was expecting week one.
Mike McCoy is a really good offensive coordinator, so not a huge surprise with that, but there was a slight surprise, admittedly, but he has been very good throughout his career. But I just thought it was the opposite of last season, in that they got the running game going and then suddenly you're not immediately off schedule on second and third down. And ultimately with Trevor Siemian, I'm starting to ask now in my own mind, is if he was a first round pick and he'd had the career he's had so far, came to mind it's still only, I think, his third year in the NFL. I genuinely think you'd be excited about him and think that that is a guy you could potentially build around. And maybe that is because Paxton Lynch has been in the wings and people were expecting him to come in at some point. I feel like that storyline has just never materialised. But he was fairly solid in bad circumstances last year because the line was terrible, and as I've mentioned, the running game was really bad. But ultimately, he's done some good things for a guy who's only started, what, now is it 15 games at this point of his career? So
yeah.
There is something there with Simeon that you could potentially build upon, I think.
I didn't get it at all. I get it a bit now. I get it. From what I saw yesterday, I kind of get it.
After the third quarter last night as well, I kind of was half joking at the top, but it was actually those four quarterbacks who were number one overall picks all did have great performances this weekend. After the third quarter, the other guy you'd lump in with that was Trevor Siemian. Yes, he had a bit of a tough finale to the game, but you know, you're talking about four number one overall picks and a guy taking him the last round. So
and against, as we've said, what we think is maybe the best edge rushing tandem in the NFL. So they're going to give a lot of other guys problems as well, especially when your two tackles aren't anything special, which is the case in Denver.
Let's get us to the earlier game last night. The Minnesota Vikings running out 29-19 winners over the New Orleans Saints. Sam Bradford set the NFL record for completion percentage last season. This year, with an O-line in front of him, mm-hmm. offering him some protection from the rush, he threw for 346 yards, three touchdowns, an 80% completion percentage. And everything that I said about Sam Bradford last season, when I got some hard pelters from Vikings fans saying that Pat Shurmur was limiting him after the offensive line went down and there was all those injuries, but the flashes he showed early, I think Sam Bradford is the quarterback for the future in Minnesota. I think they should get his longer-term contract locked down ASAP, because I was really concerned that the weapons, the Thielens, the Diggs, the Rudolphs of this world, who had all flashed but not been consistent, weren't going to necessarily be able to do it this season. They all looked brilliant last night. Dalvin Cook was great on the ground, and what was really good about Dalvin Cook on the ground as well is that the first half, I think he had 22 yards off eight carries at halftime, but they kept working him, they kept mm-hmm. pounding him. The Saints defense, whose defensive line looked decent last night, but once they were forced to drop back more because of how accurate Bradford was being, Cook started to find some openings, he started to find some lanes. Just, I really was impressed with that side of the ball for the Vikings.
I think, yeah, should have been impressed with everything that the Vikings did last night. That was like the absolute can't draw it up better game plan, in terms of they got the Saints behind, and then as soon as they got them behind, then pass rushers come into the game on defense. And you mentioned Bradford's the quarterback of the future for Minnesota. He might be the quarterback of the future in the NFL based on some of the throws last night. It was pure, unadulterated filth. Some of the throws were insane. Like, I honestly think when he's on, and he's really hot and cold at times, Bradford, but when he's on, other than Rodgers, there is nobody with his accuracy in the NFL. Mm. He is laser-like. It's absolute insanity. And some of them last night, pass rushes in his face, and he's hitting guys 20-yard sideline routes in stride. I mean, he was absolutely incredible last night.
And what there I thought as well, the guys he was throwing to, in Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, I know you said at the top of this, Will, about your Madden guy getting talking about Christian McCaffrey and him being stereotyped as a white running back, all of that. Well, I'm a bit going to do that with these two wide receivers, in that I found Stephon Diggs, some of the catches he made, some of the plays he made, and his stature rather Antonio Brown-esque, and Thielen, the way that he finds space, he has a knack of just being open. And with those great hands, he was a bit Jordy Nelson-esque for me. So you've got those two guys, and they're really coming to the fore this year. I loved what they were doing. Factor in Kyle Rudolph with Stephon Diggs, and then the change of pace with Jarrett McKinnon at the end. I know they were kind of running out the clock, but I loved every single part of that Vikings offense. And we barely talked about that defense, which is absolutely loaded. Matt Sherry, you said that they will win the NFC North. I'm not going to go that far yet, but man, it's going to be close.
Just before we get to the defense, a couple of throws to highlight. There was one to Adam Thielen out to the right sideline where he was, I mean, he got open, but essentially was in triple coverage initially. Bradford held on to the ball, evaded the rush, and got it out to him with
as Sherry called it, a laser throw on the sideline. Anyone else and anywhere else, and Thielen wouldn't have had a chance to catch it. Further wide, and it would have gone out of bounds. And both of the touchdowns to Dig. I mean, the first one was the if I'm getting them in the right order, the first one was the
touch pass to the back, wasn't it?
That was the play action pass, which was just a beautifully drawn play design, well called, and a lovely pass out there. But then the second one showed that he trusts Dig in those situations. Diggs in that situation to throw it up to him and know that he's going to come down with it when he's being absolutely smothered. And I just really impressed with that. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I said that I thought a top three unit in the NFL in terms of talent, and they are right up there when it comes to the pass rush, when it comes to the defensive backs. They're at every level, they're a really good team. And maybe sleeping a little bit on Minnesota and rethinking my playoff picks for this year.
I feel
like we still have no idea about the Saints' running game either, because it could be really, really good, but ultimately, how do you judge them against that defense? Is anybody going to be able to do that? Defense was insanely good at the start of last year, and if now that they've got an offense, that means that they're not on the field every second of the game. I genuinely think the Vikings look a terrifying prospect for any team in the NFL. And I think they're at Pittsburgh this week, which that could be a real statement win if they can go in there and get the W. I think people are going to start to sit up and take notice if that happens.
That is one hell of a game as well. Pittsburgh, oh, wow. It would be great to see how Lev Bell, who was quiet against Cleveland, see how he comes up against that defensive line, that defensive front. Antonio Brown again. Mouth-watering. Of course, we'll talk about that later on in the week. But just mentioning that is just... I love that football's back, guys.
On the Saints, a couple of positives. I said it, I thought their defensive line was better early on, and did stop the run well, and I think there are some decent pieces in that front seven. The secondary's got so many injuries. You said about not being able to know about the running game, and I know that actually on the ground, they, you know, between Pete and Kamara and Ingram, they almost exactly split the carries. But the one thing you did see was Mark Ingram catching five receptions, 54 yards. He had the one big completion on the wheel route out to the left-hand side. And that's why I think Mark Ingram was the pick in fantasy. And that's why I still think he's their main guy, because you don't necessarily get that from Peterson. Yes, you get it from Alvin Kamara. He's a good pass-catching back and had a couple of plays last night, that one long 15-yard catch. But that's why I think Ingram will see more play, because he offers other options. So I still think Ingram will be the cream that rises to the top, but Peterson against worse defenses could be a really good kind of augmentation to that.
I think you also saw Peterson get annoyed, which is absolutely inevitable. The whole season, that is... Him basically causing problems in that locker room is inevitable, because he's never going to get the level of carries. And at this point, Ingram might actually be the better inside runner as well, so... I think that they're going to have a job on their hands successfully juggling all those guys this year and keeping them all happy.
And we also saw that Drew Brees really missed Brandon Cooks or someone of that ilk, because didn't really trust anyone else. No one else really got open. I know, what was his name? Lewis, Tommy Lee Lewis managed to get open for that long one down the sideline, the right-hand sideline. But other than that, you know, passing wise, Michael Thomas didn't do anything really as well. So I could see it being a bit of a long year for Drew Brees.
All right, what we'll do, guys, now let's get into our Madden interview, and then off the back we'll do a bit of a quicker round the grounds on the Sunday games, because obviously you've already heard a lot of other people talking about those. But we'll give a few of our thoughts on those games. Massive win for the Jags in particular. A really interesting NFC West potentially to discuss. The NFC East, what's going on with the Giants. All of that still to get to. But first of all, with the release of the new Madden game and long shot mode being the latest addition, I caught up with J.R. Lemon, a.k.a. Devin Wade, and with Scott Porter, a.k.a. Colt the Cruise Missile Cruise, a.k.a. Jason Street, of course, in the TalkSport studio yesterday. And started off talking some Madden, but we get into football as well. And like I say, had some real fun with these guys.
Sunday night saw the first ever night of National Football League on TalkSport, and TalkSport 2, the most comprehensive, the most ambitious NFL coverage ever in the UK. Sunday night football every Sunday night from 1 a.m. on TalkSport, plus every Jags game, Red Zone on the radio, all coming to you every Sunday this season. The playoffs, the Super Bowl, we've got it all for you. Now, if a little bit like me, you've spent a good chunk of last week in the company of two virtual men, it's very weird to suddenly be sat in the same room as them. Devin Wade and Colt Cruz, Missile Cruz, are sat in front of me, also known as J.R. Lemon and Scott Porter, the stars of the new long shot mode in Madden 18. Gents, thanks for coming in and joining us in the studio.
No, thank you for having us, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you get to the point? I mean, Scott, a lot of people in the UK will know you from Friday Night Lights, and that's an obvious American football link. And J.R., you played at college and a little bit in the NFL as well, but how do you go about getting involved in something like long shot and something like Madden?
Yeah, so I got done playing football when I was released from the Raiders. I came to LA to train, essentially. Fell into doing commercials. Some guys I was training with were doing motion capture. They were doing the actual moves and tackles and like locomotion running to give data to the Madden people. So our moves are actually in the game. So before I was doing long shot, I actually was up in Vancouver sort of just doing regular motion capture. The creative director for long shot, Mike Young, came up during one of our trips and had this idea for a story mode in long shot. So he knew I was acting at the time. I was working on a television show called The Night Shift. And he gave us a try. We did like three prototype scenes, and that was sort of the beginning of long shot.
The thing is, I don't want to give away any spoilers for the actual mode itself if anyone's watched it, but at the end you do get a little video, a little kind of making of, and what I didn't realise, Scott, I know you've done some voice work in video games before as well, but you're actually in full motion capture suits like you see them do for kind of Planet of the Apes and stuff like that. Now you've got Dan Marino in the room with you while you're doing it. I mean, that stuff's, it just seems so surreal putting that all together.
It freaks my wife out. Because she's heard my voice in video games, but she's like, that is your, not only your face, but that you move like that in the house. Like, this is weird. I don't like it. I don't like that everyone else is seeing everything. You know, it's you look like a reject out of Cats, the musical, because they put all this face makeup on you. If you see the behind the scenes thing at the end, you just, every time you look in the mirror, you're like, oh, God, what is that? But yeah, everybody's on the same page, though. Everybody's in the same boat. So even Dan Marino looks like a reject out of Cats. So it kind of takes like the sting of meeting a Hall of Famer, takes the shine off a little bit. You know, yeah. At first you're a little starstruck and you're like, oh, Dan Marino's going to be here. And then you look at him and you're like, and he looks just as silly as I do. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, you're in a wetsuit with a bunch of dingle balls all over it with paint on your face. And then they say, look, the two of you guys are in the cab of a truck and you're fighting. And you've taken him to the graveside of his father. Like,
it's the worst moment of
your
life.
Trying to be as serious as possible, right. Looking at this other man who looks just completely ridiculous.
Well, but that is the thing, because, like, I mean, Andy Serkis is a big actor in this country, and obviously he's been one of the pioneers of all this technology, but he acts so much in that way. What's it like when you guys both have done TV before, films? What's it like suddenly having to act in essentially a warehouse, and like you say, covered in a wetsuit and dangly balls?
Oh, it's a challenge. I mean, everything is through your imagination. There is no, you know, we're on set, we get the benefit of like scrubs or a stethoscope or a nurse's station, a suit. You know, there, it's all through your imagination. You have to build everything. And not only that, there are no camera setups. So whereas on TV or film, we may do 8 pages a day, we'll do like 33 pages a day. In this, where we just jump from scene to scene because every angle is being caught at the same time. So I think it's just it's like black box theater, right? It's all imagination, which is a cool challenge.
Yeah, I've been saying for years that Andy Serkis, I mean, he would win it every year, but they really do need to create a category for motion capture actors for the Academy, for the Oscars, or even the BAFTAs, possibly. You know,
you look at like the performance of Gollum in one of those Lord of the Rings, he could have won it for something like that.
Yeah, but even that, like when you're working on a film, even with green screen behind you, it's still set pieces. Mm. You still have sets, there's still props. He's just in a special suit, but they still work with like live actors and stuff. I just had a great time. It is challenging though, because you just feel like a kid again. Like once you get into the groove of it, you're just in a blank white room when you shoot the video game stuff. But when you get into the groove of it, you just start to feel like a kid again. you're really just counting on your imagination. And we lose that a little bit as adults. So it was really, really difficult, but so much fun all at the same time.
Well, on that same point, I mean, NFL here in the UK became kind of, had a real peak in the 80s and then it's had a resurgence in the last 10 years or so as they've brought games over here. But Dan Marino is still someone who, lots of Dolphins fans in this country, lots of people still like follow the sport from that era. And when he came over for a Dolphins game a couple of years ago, he's still the sort of person who, if he walks down the street in London, he gets recognised. People do become like kids because it's one of their idols. What's it like working with someone like Dan Marino?
Well, it was interesting. He has a special story about it. But I mean, from my perspective, you know, a superstar comes in like that and comes into like an unfamiliar environment, they're going to have a bit of a shell up. What was really cool was to see like how warm of an environment that we created, and see all that stuff sort of come down, and him sort of be curious about it and want to learn and really do a good job with it, because that's what you want. You want the real Dan Marino, not, you know, maybe what he has in his head. And I think we were able to get that, making him comfortable.
I was just happy he was on my turf for once. See, because right, of Friday Night Lights, I've been able to play in a lot of pro amateur flag football games. I've caught touchdown passes from Warren Moon, Troy Aikman. Dan Marino was my quarterback once. I did catch a touchdown from him. But Marcus Allen was on the team as well. And I had scored a touchdown against Marcus Allen in a prior flag football game.
Because everyone can say that they've done that before.
I've got it on tape. I put a spin move on him. It was actually pretty nasty. But so I saw Marcus Allen on the bus on the way to the game. And it was for Madden. It was for Madden 25th anniversary. We were playing flag football on a USS aircraft carrier that's parked in San Diego.
Wow.
It was just an amazing day. Both teams stacked with Hall of Famers. And I see Mr. Allen. I'm like, Mr. Allen, we met before. You know, we played this flag football game down in Miami. And as I'm getting to the spin move story, Marino walks on the bus and he's just king of the court when he's in his realm, his football. And he goes, hey, kid, sit down. Let me tell everybody a story of how two people they actually care about met. And it was like this amazing moment of like, wow, like Marino just like. So I was a little rough. And then like you run up to him in the huddle and you're like, hey, I've got good hands, man. I got speed. I'm running this crossing route. Yeah, sure, kid. Yeah, sure. Everybody thinks they can play football. That's fine. But then he shows up to work with us and I'm like, oh, now you're on my turf. Beautiful. All right, let's go. No, he's an awesome dude. And we've got a Hall of Famer in Dan Marino. We've got an Oscar Award winner in Mahershala Ali in our game. That's just a testament to how well it delivers on both the story side and the football side of things.
And I think that's what's amazing about it, and the reason I really enjoyed it. They did a similar thing with FIFA last year, which tested it out. I know a lot of people here will have played that mode as well, but it's kind of those filmic video games. I mean, I know you're a big gamer, Scott. I don't know about you, JR, but those kind of film-style video games, The Last of Us, all that sort of things, are becoming so popular now that to build something like that into a sports sim like Madden, it's quite a bold step, but also I think like it'll draw a lot of new people in.
Yeah, I think that was the point of it. The point of it was to try to reach people who weren't just the diehard Madden fans. I think one of the biggest compliments that, you know, I've gotten, I'm sure you've gotten it too, is when people, like, for instance, significant others, husbands who play Madden all the time and, you know, can't really include their wives or girlfriends, you know, the girlfriend's coming up to us and saying, you know what, I've never picked up the game before, but I saw Longshot, I played it, and I loved it, right? And I learned about football because...
That's the thing, like, it's the thing of, like, recognizing coverages, recognizing formations, all that sort of thing, which you won't, a lot of, like, football fans, even if they play Madden, won't necessarily know how to do that, and it kind of teaches you that little extra
step. A real play,
step.
Right? Yeah. How to call a play. I think it serves as a tutorial in some way. But I also think, like, it shows that football players just aren't robots. I feel like it makes the football experience and football players relatable. Right, it's just a guy. It's a football story that's not about football. It's a guy who thinks he's not good enough. It's a guy who thinks he doesn't have enough. We've all experienced that in some way, shape, or form. So it makes athletes relatable. I think that's not just particular to football. Right, maybe basketball players too. I think football even more so because these guys have helmets on. We don't see them like we see basketball players. We don't know them like we know soccer players who we recognize. They're more these...
Proper football players.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can say soccer here. That's fine.
Proper football. Right. Sorry.
You're absolutely spot on. Terrell Davis was over doing NFL Network for a London game a couple of years ago. And weirdly, I sat next to him at this dinner thing and I had to explain to him what Yorkshire pudding was. It was a very odd experience. But he was saying that that afternoon, he just left his hotel, walked around London for 3 hours, and no one knew. He said, like, one person came up to me the whole time. And that was amazing to me, because when he's in America, obviously he can't do anything like that if he's just out on the street. So something else from this game. We get to hear you guys belt out Miley Cyrus at one point in the van. You've also got your long shot song. I mean, I'm starting to wonder, Scott, between you mentioned Heart of Dixie before. My wife, I said this before, she's a big Heart of Dixie fan. She also showed me the video for something called Pop Goes My Heart,
yep,
which I'd never seen before. I mean, are you like Christopher Walken now? Are you starting to demand that you sing in every role you do?
I no, it's something that comes out of the ideas. Like Mike Young, who wrote this project, he put the singing stuff in just because he wanted it to be unexpected. You know, he wanted, when you're on a road trip with a best friend, you sing stupid songs in the car. That's just what you do.
Yeah.
Just because these guys are macho football players doesn't mean they don't do the exact same thing that everybody else does. But I started in theater. I started my actual career beatboxing. I beatboxed for 7 years. That's how I paid the bills for a long time. That took me to Broadway. And then I booked another Broadway gig before Friday Night Lights. And everybody that I work with, they come to find out that I sing, and then they try and slide it in one way or the other. But yeah, Pop Goes My Heart was the first thing I ever shot in film or television. And it, to this day, might be the thing that I shot that was the most fun. It was really, really, really a good time. If you have never seen the video, JR is looking at me like...
Have you not seen it, JR?
No one told me about this.
Yeah, imagine
after this.
Imagine Wham. You know Wham with George Michael?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's right up your alley. Yeah, imagine that, but the two people in Wham are me and Hugh Grant. Yeah, I see it.
I'm enjoying this. Yeah, we'll get it up on the phone afterwards because you've got to see it for it to be believed.
There's excitement.
Yeah, he knew I could play the guitar a little bit. He knew I could sing a little bit, and you know the crazy thing about the Long Shot theme song, which does get into your head. People have asked me if I wrote it. I did not write it. The man who wrote it is named Theo Fleury. Have you ever heard of the NHL, National Hockey League?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this guy's a Hall of Famer, and he finished playing hockey. And he was a musician, and nobody would have known it, but he's a country music singer now. He writes all of these wonderful songs. So he wrote that for Mike.
So you've got an NHL Hall of Famer writing your songs. You've got an NFL Hall of Famer throwing your passes. And
Academy Award winner.
Yeah, an Academy Award winner acting alongside you. This is
and us two idiots.
Cushy job.
I know, right? Where do we come from?
Yeah.
The NFL did get underway last night. I saw you guys at the NFL UK big launch event they did in London. I don't know actually how much football you got to watch yesterday. But, JR, I wanted to ask you. You came out of Stanford, a Cardinal, and we saw Christian McCaffrey, his first snaps last night for the Panthers against the 49ers. Decent night, 85 total yards, and I don't know if you as someone who's left goes back and never does any work with them, but this is a special kid that people are going to be pretty excited about.
Oh my goodness, I mean, I remember him as a freshman. There was that spark in him. He just has that spark, right? And he's always the guy that you don't think, for instance, like, I think he gets a bad rap, and you know, you can knock me out for this if you want to. I think he would have gotten farther as, for people see black players and think that they're just more athletic and that they should be the Heisman winner, they should be this, they should be that. But I think in America, he was not looked at as good as he was because he was a white running back, which is something we don't typically see.
And what's amazing is the comparison thing as well. And
I
see this time and time again. He's a white running back coming out of college, so obviously he's going to be compared to Danny Woodhead.
Not to Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush, who he had a great career too. Or someone like Devonta Freeman, who's catching passes out of the backfield now. But no, it's got to be Danny Woodhead because he can catch passes and he's white. That still stuns me about the NFL
now. But this is a testament to his skill because he's had to work even harder, I feel like. He's had to do even more, prove himself, which he did. Which is why he went first round when everyone was like, I don't know if he's fast enough. The guy ran a 4.4.
Yeah.
Right? They said he's not fast enough. He went 4.4.
No. They say that white players are sneaky fast.
Sneaky fast.
Yeah, then you start.
Surprisingly fast for a white man.
Yeah.
You're talking my language, though. You got Christian McCaffrey, Ed McCaffrey's kid. I'm a big Broncos fan.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And then you're talking Danny Woodhead. He's out of Shadron, Nebraska. That's where I'm from. Maybe I could have made it, guys. I could have made it.
Maybe there's still a chance.
Maybe I shouldn't have quit playing football my freshman year of college. I should have stuck with it.
Maybe there's still a chance. But no,
maybe there's still a chance.
I think
he's going to have a video game, and it looks like you're having a great time doing it. So yeah, I think he's going to have a great year.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I played. against Cam, his high school. He was a freshman at the time. So I'm familiar with his history, too. So I'm rooting for the guys, for
great.
Sure.
Great, good stuff. And the Broncos, Chargers tonight. This is going to be outdated by the time it goes out most places, but tough season opener, tough year all round with your quarterback situation. And
now,
yeah,
come on now.
Transition.
You know, the thing is last year, this is when people watch football, they tend to want to blame or give success to the team based on the quarterback play only.
I mean, it's Jason Street, you know that well.
Last year, though, I know, yeah. I did not know how to tackle, apparently. The thing was, last year, the offensive line was just not up to par. We had no running game, and you've got Trevor Siemian trying to do way too much. I think this year he's going to surprise people. I think he's a much better quarterback than people think. And with the improved offensive line and hopefully the resurgence of our running game, he'll be just fine. Our problem is the division that we're in.
Yeah.
Chiefs, Raiders, the much improved Chargers. It's just, that's a tough road to hoe to get to the playoffs. So we'll see what happens.
Look, I could chat football with you guys all day long, but I'm sure you've got plenty more to be getting on with and promoting this great game. Madden 18 out now. Check out. We'll have a review up on the TalkSport website and on Gridiron as well. And just keep enjoying what you're doing because you guys look like you're having a blast.
Oh, yeah. This is a dream come true.
Absolutely.
We both played Madden since we were 11 years old. If you would have told me at 11 that I would be in Madden, I would have thought I had to go to journalism school and become like the successor to Madden himself. So I'm thrilled, and thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, man.
No, really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys. J.R. Lemon, Scott Porter, check out Madden 18 in shop.
Hello, you're listening to the Horse Ramble Daily, where we'll be covering all of your horse needs. And there's more. Every day during the Cheltenham Festival, Betway are giving you the chance to win £50,000 in the free-to-play or to win game. Head to Betway.com to play now. Up next, more horses. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Full terms apply. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org.
What's now?
J.R. Lemon, Scott Porter, really good fun. And like I say, Madden is in shops now. And my review will be up on the Gridiron website in the not-too-distant future. Now we've got the opening weekend of football on TalkSport sorted and out of the way. I can actually spend some time sat down on my laptop and put some thoughts down. But I have to say, the new Madden, I have played it more than any other recent edition of Madden, not just because of the brilliant new long shot mode, but I've been getting really into Madden Ultimate Team as well, has hooked me in for the first time ever. So there we go. I'm going to be spending a lot of time up in my man cave, or sorry, my gender neutral cave, playing Madden over the next few weeks, I imagine. Let's get into the Sunday night games. And do you know where I'm going to start? And I'm not going to start with the sexy Seahawks-Packers game. I'm not going to start off by talking about Sunday night football. I'm starting in Houston, Texas, baby. Because the Jacksonville Jaguars, 10 sacks for the first time in franchise history. Calais Campbell breaking the single sack game record for the franchise in the first half of the game. And before we get into our analysis of it, let's hear from defensive end Yannick Ngakoue. I caught up with him. He had 2 strip sacks on the night, and I spoke with him directly after the game to get his thoughts.
So delighted to welcome on second-year defensive end of the Jacksonville Jaguars on a day where they hit a franchise record for sack numbers. Yannick Ngakoue on the show with us now. Yannick, 2 strip sacks of your own, recovered a fumble. What a day to be a Jaguar.
Yeah, it's a blessing. I'm just thankful God put me in a position to make those plays to help out the team. But it's not just on me. The whole defense did great. From the D-line all the way to the back end, they did what they had to do. We still got stuff to clean up, but I'm just pleased and I'm just very proud of everybody in this locker room.
Now, you had Calais Campbell, one of the big money signings this summer, has come in the first half. He set your franchise record for a single game sack total, set his own career record. I mean, what kind of impact has Calais had on your locker room?
He's had a great impact. Just his voice and his leadership, man, is just taking guys the right way, man. Giving guys the right mentality and the right mindset, man. Each and every day at practice, he's always talking, always trying to motivate. And personally, he's doing a great job of motivating me. He pushes me, and when I just see him do that performance right there, it's pushing me to be able to match that. So he's just a blessing to have in the locker room as well.
Well, it's got to be for a second-year guy to have a big name like that come in and dominate like you have in that first game, mate. People are going to be talking about that Jags defense tomorrow morning.
Yeah, definitely, man. We've been trying to tell people that we got one of the best defenses in the league, and we're just trying to show each and every week it doesn't stop here. You know, we got Tennessee coming up this weekend. We just got to focus on that now. It's a great win. We just enjoy this win today and the next one. And tomorrow, we just get focused on Tennessee.
And just tell me a little bit about what you saw on the other side of the ball, because the big story from a Texans perspective is going to be that at halftime, they changed out. They took out Tom Savage from the game, put Deshaun Watson in. He had some yards on the ground, had a couple more decent plays, and he looks like a guy who could have an impact in this league himself.
Yeah, I definitely tip out my hat to number four. Number four is a great player. He's a good player. And he's going to just keep developing to be definitely a great quarterback and great leader for that team. Nothing but respect for him.
And finally, Yannick, just tell me a little bit about today, because going to Houston, playing their first game at NRG after Hurricane Harvey and after what that city's gone through. I mean, the reaction when the teams came out, the place was absolutely electric. And then you go in there and shut it down like you do.
Yeah, man, we had to come in here, we had to shut it down, and we took it personal, too. You know, we're about to be hit by a hurricane as well. Irma's coming to Jacksonville, so we just had to deal with our family members as well. And we still praying for the people in Houston that got hit by her.
And then I've got to ask you, Tennessee next week, I don't know if you followed the scores. They lost to the Raiders today, so that's going to be a big game in the AFC South already as you guys look to push on this season under Doug Marrone.
Yeah, definitely. Tomorrow we celebrate today, and tomorrow we just lock in on Tennessee. We watch film, and we just definitely just try to get ready and prepare for everything that's coming.
Yannick Ngakoue, now I don't know if you saw it, Sherry, or if you've seen it, Ollie. The Jacksonville Jaguars have changed their Twitter name to #Saxonville on Sunday night after the game. They went into Houston, an emotional night. The sound as J.J. Watt came out was incredible, and they just absolutely shut the Texans down.
I mean, that is a ridiculous move for a franchise who were above 500 for the first time in about a decade. I've got to say, ludicrous. Like, that's the kind of thing that could easily come back and bite them on the behind. And now, as much as I want to see them do well, I kind of hope it does, because it's the classic buying into hype when you've not been very good. It's that really strikes a chord with me. But, yeah, ultimately, it was kind of a perfect... I've initially said perfect storm, which is the absolute wrong thing to say in this instance. It was a collection of things coming together that, in kind of negatively for the Houston Texans, and I do think it's easy to sit and slate the Texans because they were terrible. The defensive line was as bad as the offensive line relative to the talent that they have on that line.
I think part of that as well, Sherry, is though that when you get behind, because your offensive line is so bad and the opposite defense are making plays, you then get behind. The way that you play then has to change. And what we saw from Jacksonville is exactly what Doug Marrone told us he wanted to see. They established the run early. I can't remember them throwing on first down once. They established the run early. They ran Leonard Fournette like a bell cow. And that took all of the pressure off Blake Bortles. Their offensive line was better than we've seen it in about 3 years. And I know that you're saying the D-line from the Texans' perspective was a problem. But when you are able to establish and run the ball like that, you can't bring pressure in the same way. And it was a lot to do with game flow rather than performance, maybe. This is why the Texans' D-line didn't get it done.
Well, I mean, my overriding point on the whole team was going to be that, really, you look at all the stuff that they've had to go through in the last few weeks and basically seeing their city get decimated and how that changes your perspective unless you're Dwayne Brown, who continues to greedily hold out in farcical circumstances. And I just think moving to Dallas to practice and kind of that whole thing can create this level of performance, especially when it was so emotional before the game. And the kind of, I think you can kind of get outside of the mindset of just winning a football game because you're trying to win it for different reasons, and that can happen. And I think the Jacksonville Jaguars were brilliant, and the first performance really in the last 2 years where you can say really this could be now a springboard, provided they don't let it go to the head, which apparently the PR department have.
Just to mention on the other side of the ball, you and I, Matt Sherry, are two human beings who are very high on Bill O'Brien. But last year, he admitted to regretting making a quarterback switch too early in the year because he panicked. Bringing in Deshaun Watson at halftime in this game, and yes, he made a couple of nice plays on the ground, but overall, he didn't look like a guy who was ready for the NFL, didn't make his reads, very simplified system.
I'm starting to worry that Bill O'Brien can coach every element of the team except for quarterbacks, which is what he's meant to be good at.
And that's I think the problem is that it is what he's meant to be good at, and he seems to get too involved in that area in a way that he wouldn't. You've got to be a head coach, and that means coaching every department of the football team. And I think he's too involved in that. And I know they had some problems with George Godsey, the offensive coordinator, last year, and ended up firing him. But ultimately, they need to find somebody who he can trust and does trust to manage that side of things for him a little bit more, I think. But, yeah, I mean, you do fear, for all everything I've just said, you do kind of fear for the Texans because it was so similar to last year, so obviously a problem. And while I think we all collectively are keen to see Deshaun Watson and see how he can develop, I think we all know that it's going to take a long time for him to develop. And ultimately, unless the defense plays to the level that we thought it was going to enter in the year, then it's going to put more pressure on him than I think he can handle at this point.
And Deshaun Watson picked up an ankle injury, so he might not even be available for this Sunday's game.
That could be an absolute blessing in disguise for Bill O'Brien, because it's an excuse to go back to Savage and try and stick with him a bit longer and not make a panicky move again. My radio brain is struggling here because I'm like, Deshaun Watson, do we go to the Browns game and talk to Sean Kizer? Do we stick AFC South and go to the Titans?
Well, very quickly,
talk very much. Do we talk about the Packers? Where do we go next?
Well, very quickly, Allen Robinson is out for the season, which I think is a huge miss for them. We saw that they really did use Leonard Fournette as a bell cow, and even more so when Allen Robinson went out, means Alan Hearns, Marquise Lee et al. Are all going to have to step up. So gutting for the Jags in that respect. But you choose where we go next, Will Gavin.
Let's head to Tennessee. It's where the Jacksonville Jaguars have to head next week. Finishes 26-16 to the Oakland Raiders. A lot of us picked the Titans in this game. I can't remember if it was everyone, but it felt like it was. And yet, the Oakland Raiders went in there, and do you know what they did? They played a bloody good game of football.
They were really, really impressive. More impressive than any of their wins last season, I think. I am slightly concerned about Tennessee because I kind of hinted at it last week, but I can see a situation where they do not live up to anything like the kind of potential they've got. And I spoke to Adam Foxcroft, most notoriously the man who invaded our DMs with the worst thing we've ever seen once. But I briefly had a back and forth with him on Sunday. My issue early in the game was I just thought that they tried to run the ball too much on first down. And he disagreed, and admittedly, I was watching Red Zone and a bit of that, so I didn't see it all. But I just don't like their offense, and
they struggled. It was not a I did watch this game in a bit more depth. They really struggled. It was exactly the opposite of what happened with Jacksonville. They got behind early. They struggled to establish the run. DeMarco Murray just 12 carries on 44 yards. Marcus Mariota ended up throwing 41 times in total.
But him throwing 41 times was largely because they were constantly in second and nine and then third and eight. And I didn't think that they threw it more because that's what they're doing and they're trying to move more to Mariota. I just thought they couldn't establish that running game, and then it was kind of like, well, what do we do now? And that's a concern for me.
Ollie, I mean this with the most love in the world. Mm. You love your special teams. A word for Giorgio Tavecchio.
Oh, what a guy. What a guy. His first two kicks were over 50 yards. He's come in for Seabass.
Seabass, who is a hero, one of the greatest kickers in modern NFL history.
I love Seabass, but I think the tide has changed, and the Seabass has to be changed for a little bit of Italian calamari, man. I loved him, and it was absolutely outstanding. What a performance.
That is sensational.
That's the best thing you've ever said, Ollie. Get it on Twitter now. Right, let's move on. I don't know where to go with that next. Let's talk about the other really big matchup from Sunday night, as it looked going into the weekend, as early on two offenses very much struggled to get going. The Seattle Seahawks against the Green Bay Packers. Packers running out 17-9 winners in the end. And my front door's just gone, and that's my water pump being delivered. So I'm going to leave it. Russell Wilson, I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback, but he's gonna have to get some more support this year because that was not good enough.
I think in our massive hysteria with Sheldon Richardson, just I think all of us collectively forgot just how bad Seattle's offensive line is, and
it's an absolute jokel. the offensive line. You're welcome.
Ollie, you're on fire, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was the worst individual performance from a unit I think I've ever seen. Like, it was just... There's a brilliant image floating around on Twitter of basically three... There's like four offensive linemen. I've just looked at it again. There's four Seattle offensive linemen just on their backs, so looking in the other direction. And three defensive linemen just literally within a foot of Russell Wilson. It's just staggering how bad they are. And actually... Ollie, I'm sure you agree on this. The Packers couldn't get anything going offensively until the fumble. I mean, that kind of changed the whole game, that single play. I think it was Daniels again, wasn't it?
It was Mike Daniels. Mike Daniels, for a three-technique defensive tackle, had an incredible game, stat-wise.
Yeah, it was insane how good he was.
Seven tackles, five for solo, 1.5 sacks, another tackle for loss, a forced fumble, the fumble... that was recovered by Kyler Fackrell, that led to the Ty Montgomery play where he stuffed it in. And that pretty much for Ty Montgomery was his catalyst to get things going, because it'd been pretty anemic, as had the rest of the Packers' offense up until that point. The Jordy Nelson touchdown catch came from a flag on the play from a false start. Classic Aaron Rodgers. But I think the real story in all of this, we know that the Green Bay offense will take a little time to kick in, but that defense, a defense that we thought would... well, you guys thought would be smashed by Russell Wilson and Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin et al. That Green Bay defense was just unreal. Cornerbacks played up. Quinton Rollins. Nick Perry was justifying his big contract in the summer.
Ollie.
They were great.
It's hard to get that excited when the offensive line was bad. The only other takeaway...
No. It's not even that. The thing that I would be concerned about, Ollie, is it's still incredibly thin as a unit. The starters looked great yesterday.
Yeah,
a couple of injuries, it falls off a cliff.
The other takeaway for Seattle is Jimmy Graham is never going to be good again. That guy.
Yeah.
I really thought this was going to be the year that he bounced back. Yeah. I even took him in a couple of fantasy leagues, like as the 9th or 10th tight end. But yeah, it's a real shame. I know you've talked about it already, but on the Russell Wilson thing, and this wasn't his fault, but the O-line was so bad that he did what we were talking about the other week, where he looked like he was taking snaps and he was taking off before he even got a chance to make one read, let alone get progressed through reads. So yeah, that could be a real problem. And the problem is, going against a good team, what will now happen is Seattle will play the 49ers, etc., and look really good. But the moment they come up against a good team, I think that's a problem. And I'm worried it's another season for the Seahawks going to the playoffs, but falling at a hurdle where they face a decent team.
Yeah.
Last thing on defensive performances that I meant to mention earlier, and this is the last thing on the Jaguars. Miles Jack was absolutely sensational.
Yeah, you are right there. He was
brilliant. Which is great to see, because it really didn't work out for him as a rookie. And I think we were really big on him in Gridiron, the magazine side as well. So really nice to see him put in a performance.
And hey, look what, Dante Fowler, not quite at the level of Jack, but had a great game as well.
Yeah.
And you've got two guys there who last year we were saying that they were both coming off those knee injuries. This year, if they're fully ready to go with modern medicine, what it is and what you can get out of knee surgery nowadays, it's like they've just got a bunch more first-round picks again. It could be really exciting. Colts-Rams. I just want to mention this game,
no,
at least in briefly.
No.
Because the Colts and Scott Tolzien are maybe one of the worst football teams I've ever seen.
The longer he stays as their number one, the bigger the chance that they will have the number one pick next year. I'm absolutely convinced of it.
It sounds like they're going to start Brissett, from what I've just seen on Twitter. And he'll have had six practices by the point of the game.
He'll be better than Tolzien.
He had one great completion yesterday. I just want to say, on the Los Angeles Rams side, because everyone is saying, oh, it's only because it was the Colts. I've not seen a Los Angeles Rams team, even when playing a terrible team, who've been able to put 46 points on anyone. Cooper Kupp looked really good. They actually looked like, already with Sean McVay's system, they had more of a rhythm. Jared Goff looked a lot more comfortable. I know it's against a bad team, but even against bad teams, you have to perform. And I'm just saying that Rams defense, combined with a medium-level offense, we talked about on the last podcast, they could be a team to surprise people this year. And by surprise people, I mean getting to 500.
And Aaron Donald is to come back as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the one negative for the Rams is Todd Gurley did not look good again.
No, no. I was in, when I was in LA recently, I told the story about I was in that sports store and it was all Rams gear and very little Chargers gear. I was going to buy some kind of gift for my friend who's a big Rams fan. And basically they had, you know, those pop collector little plastic mold characters you can buy with the big heads. The only one they had was Todd Gurley, and the guy in the shop went, "Oh, we've got these. They're like $15." And I was like, "Is Todd Gurley the only one you've got?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "But what if he's terrible again this year? I don't want to buy my friend something for a guy who ended up being a one-year wonder." And yeah, the guy basically said, "Yeah, that's why we're not selling any of them." So Todd Gurley has already gone down in the estimation of the people of Los Angeles, it seems. And,
yeah, I still think he should be great, but ultimately, why isn't he? We also missed the biggest storyline when discussing Oakland, Tennessee as well.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
That Tony Romo is already one of the best three color commentators in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know what? He is already one of the best three color commentators in the NFL.
Rex Ryan's the worst.
And Rex Ryan was terrible last night. And Jerry Jones, hang your head in shame, because you've started to finally build a decent roster now with a good O-line and with a great running back and everything else. Knowing from that broadcast just how well Tony Romo reads the game, to have not had that man be sent deep in the playoffs or to a Super Bowl because you couldn't build a good team around him, I'm genuinely devastated for him.
I hope
Prescott gets injured late in the season and Tony Romo gets called into that team and the Cowboys go and win the Super Bowl. And that hurts to say, but I would love to see Tony Romo get a ring now.
You should never hope for another player to get injured, for a player to get injured. That's out of order. You know you're out of order. I want you to retract that mentally.
And retract
it on the podcast.
Like a high ankle sprain, something he's going to come back from with relative ease. But it just knocks him out for the perfect period of time of the playoffs and the Super Bowl.
We all know you're out of order in all of this. Listening to Tony Romo, though, and the way he's calling and predicting what the play will be offensively as well as defensively, what the defense is showing, I just think, could he earn more money as some sort of coordinator or head coach? Because he knew what was coming, and it was kind of freaky the way he was doing it. It was unreal.
It was ludicrous.
Let's talk about the Cowboys on Sunday night. A game we carried on TalkSport, and whilst I thought the coverage was obviously excellent, it was a terrible game. It was a genuinely terrible game of football. Just very quick takeaways from this one, because I don't think we need to linger on it. The Cowboys look good. Still, Prescott is being kept reasonably simple, but he did a few more interesting wrinkles, and I think that they're starting to try and introduce more to that offense. But when you've got Zeke and that O-line, it's fine. The Giants' defense still looks pretty decent. I'm worried for the Cowboys that they're not finishing drives. The fact that they settled for one touchdown and a bunch of field goals is a minor concern. But the Giants on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I wasn't ready to buy into your Eli Manning is done shtick quite yet, Matt, but I think I might be ready to after seeing that performance. And to kind of round that off, the Cowboys' defense, we gave a lot of stick to in this offseason. Losing their entire secondary looks like it could be a real problem. I said about units that were the biggest surprise to me this week. What Dallas were, Sean Lee was incredible, and the rest of the defense was so fast to get after the ball, to get after the quarterback. They were ball hawking. It was like they'd taken the mode that's being done at those other defenses you've seen that have been great and gone and tried to improve in those areas. Maybe they'll be showing up against a better offense than the Giants, but there was enough there to make me consider that they might be good this year.
I think the jury is still out. It'll be interesting to see them against other teams. But I think one of the great stories was Jalen Smith starting his first game and actually looking pretty good. It does appear that he can actually run viably, which is more than any of the videos I'd seen suggested. So that was positive. I mean, the only question coming out of this game for me is who's more done out of Eli Manning and Brandon Marshall, who was equally dreadful in this game.
Yeah, fair. Brandon Marshall, but he's still got his catch. Got to keep his record.
Right at the end. Crazy.
No, good for him.
But he was anonymous, I agree.
He was absolutely anonymous. Earlier in the day, in another all-NFC clash, the Philadelphia Eagles go to Washington, get a 30-17 win. Washington, they came back into it in the second half, and I think early on that rebuilt offense really struggled to find any kind of click whatsoever. I mean, Kirk Cousins was their leading rusher on the day. Terrell Pryor Sr. ends up catching six passes for 66 yards, but there were a number of other occasions where you could see the communication was off. That's going to have to take some time to develop, but the Eagles' front is brilliant. They got after them all day. The blitz packages were absolutely nuts. And Carson Wentz is throwing bombs. I was really enjoying the Eagles on Sunday night.
Carson Wentz was amazing until he was asked to throw the ball less than 10 yards when it just appeared everything could go wrong. I've never seen a quarterback look more uncomfortable throwing screen passes, which is what his head coach seems to really specialise in. So, yeah, there were some positive signs. I still massively worry about Wentz and the whole nature of that Philadelphia offense doesn't fill me with any real excitement, to be honest.
And looking at all four of those teams, you could see them all taking wins off each other, one winning at home, the other away, or vice versa. I can't, from the first games, obviously this is a massive hot take, but I can't really see who is the standout team out of those four.
Oh, see, I definitely think it's the Cowboys now. I was massively interested in the Cowboys this week just because I thought they lost twice to the Giants last year. If they're going to have the downturn that I could see coming, I kind of thought you would see it early because I just... They were just so impressive. Like, they were just... They were resoundingly impressive. And I can't wait to see them in Denver this week. That should be... That's a really great early test of
that's
that
a great
theory
show.
As well.
Great show.
Right, we've got five more games. We're going to rattle through them. I want one person to take each game and just give their thoughts. And I'll start with you, Matt Sherry. You can even pick which game you'd like to do.
You're going to have to tell me what's available. Well, just give me any.
You've got your two AFC North games. You've got Cardinals, Lions, Jets, Bills, and Panthers, 49ers.
Well, let's go for Panthers, 49ers, Will. Maybe the worst head coaching debut I've ever seen from a game management perspective from Kyle Shanahan. Ridiculous decisions to go for it on fourth down when Cam looked completely off. At that point, the defense was playing well, and the idea of pinning them deep and trusting the defense was clearly the way to go at that point early in the game. I think they were only seven down for the first one, and it just was just horrific. I mean, and to the point where already, if I was Kyle Shanahan, I'd be calling Mike and saying, I want you to sit in the booth and do all in-game decision-making for me, because it was pathetic.
Yeah, lack of experience as a head coach just really showed there, didn't it?
Yeah, and Carolina's defense looked really good, which was nice. Great to see Luke Kuechly back with yet another interception. So yeah, things to build on for Carolina, but I thought Cam, I think there's still work to be done for him.
Agreed. Ollie, pick a game.
I'm going to take the Cardinals losing at the Detroit Lions to 23-35. I thought the Lions looked really, really good. Golladay with that incredible catch. Matt Stafford, I know you said it at the top of the show, Will, being a first-round pick who's had a load of criticism throughout the years, but I've always believed, and I thought he looked excellent. A team that I wasn't very high on, I don't think many people were very high on, but they bombed the Cardinals out. And from the Cardinals' point of view, Carson Palmer, okay, three interceptions. I think one or at least one of those was tipped, so you can't really have that totally on.
Yeah, the last one was.
Yeah, you can't have that totally on him, but he didn't look very good. Lots of mistakes. David Johnson, he's out for a prolonged period of time with a fractured wrist. I know they're bringing in a guy off of the New England practice squad. They've got Kerwin Williams and Andre Ellington there, but I wouldn't be too fussed about either of those guys. Old man Fitz, I think that was really the only good point in the catches he did make. He was targeted 13 times and only caught six of them, but hey-ho. So I was high on the Cardinals preseason. I'm not so high on them now.
Okay, I'm going to take... I'm all right, good with all of that. I'm going to take Steelers-Browns. DeShone Kizer coming in, made some plays, still looked like a rookie, but you know what? I think that for the first time in a while, Cleveland can have a real feeling of positivity going into this season. Losing to their divisional rivals, pushing them close by just 3 points, almost completely shutting down Le'Veon Bell on the day. Roethlisberger having to rely on his arm. Two touchdowns to Jesse James. Antonio Brown, if he doesn't make two or three really big plays, then actually the Steelers could have been in trouble offensively. But TJ Watt, let's talk about TJ Watt, because
There was talk about, okay, he's going to be a workout warrior, but he'll never be the player that JJ Watt is. DJ Watt, 7 tackles on the day, 2 sacks. He got a pick and he got a fumble recovery as well. Absolutely ridiculous. He had an incredible day.
And JJ has never done all those things in a game.
Yeah, so the Steelers' defense, we talked about it in preseason, the Steelers' defense is an improving unit, and overall as a team, they should be fine in the AFC North, but well done Cleveland for keeping it tight, and Corey Coleman and DeShone Kizer had a nice little link-up going there, so I think Cleveland can be positive on their loss this weekend.
Well done, mate. Well done.
But back to Matt Sherry, you've got Ravens, Bengals or Jets, Bills?
Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, we're not going to say anything at all about Jets Bills on this podcast. So ultimately, it leaves you with just one choice. I mean, it was just the Baltimore defense. If anybody was sleeping on them, they're not now. I mean, they were absolutely outstanding. A friend of the show, Brandon Williams, was insanely good in this game. Maybe the defensive performance of the week that won't really be talked about. He was absolutely awesome. And the Ravens, when they get this blueprint going, they actually ran the ball more effectively than I thought they would. Flacco just had to be kind of accurate and do, not accurate, but just reliable, not do anything to lose the game, basically. And he was that. I mean, Cincinnati did move the ball in spots, but then they just, Baltimore found a way to get turnovers and their defense was awesome. And as for the Bengals, I mean, Christ, where do you begin?
They're so done.
Dalton's done. The Bengals are done. Dear, oh dear.
Why isn't Mixon starting? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But then, why put him in when your offensive line can't open up running lanes? But I mean, I'm not sure anybody's going to open up running lanes on that Ravens defense. They are awesome against the run. So, yeah, I mean, Ravens defense, great. I think the Ravens will push the Steelers all the way in that division.
I was wondering if that cat noise was coming from you or from my cat.
These are the Bengal Tigers, man. They've become little moggies, mingy moggy, mangy manky, minky mutty cats. There is one game that we haven't claimed
that Matt Sherry was going to have the MVP performance today, but between your seafood gag and that cat noise, it's clearly you, Ollie.
He also referred to Seattle's offensive line as a jokel while you were out, which was equally sensitive.
One game we haven't talked about that you've missed off on the list was the Falcons beating the Chicago Bears
27-17. Yeah, the huge game, Will.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. Sorry, how you missed guys. That. I don't know if anyone saw Austin Hooper's 88-yard touchdown reception where he threw down the safety, I forget his name, from the Bears, threw him down on his way to running into the back of the end zone. I was high on Austin Hooper. I've been high on him in fantasy. I said he's going to have a big year. I have been proved once again correct. When it comes to the rest of the Atlanta performance, didn't really get anything going rushing wise. Chicago actually looked pretty good. Tarik Cohen, both good out of the backfield and rushing on the ground. Mike Glennon looked okay. The Bears were better than they thought they would be. The defense
was really impressive. I just think the biggest takeaway for me is, in terms of significance for the rest of the season, the manner in which Atlanta ultimately won that game might be make it the easily the most important week one victory, because they could have easily lost it, and then you've got the mental scars of another team coming back against you, and to kind of reunify that locker room, a win like that will do that, and makes us really excited for the NFC Championship game rematch on Sunday Night Football. You can tell I've just inputted our picks into the picks challenge, which 901 people played on opening week, and we should get more people
opening
playing
week.
This week. But week 2 looks bloody awesome as well.
That's Packers at Falcons, live on TalkSport from 1 a.m. Monday morning.
Have you got a cold now as well as Sherry?
Sync up our coverage. You get Kevin Kugler and Jason freaking Taylor. Forget what Sky are offering you. You want to listen to our coverage whilst watching the game on the TV.
100%.
Or just listen to our coverage. I'm really sorry to Falcons fans and Bears fans. That was a really big game. I did miss it off in my attempt to make sure that Ollie could get to work on time. Jets, Bills. It was a football game. The Bills are top of the AFC East after week 1, which is ludicrous.
No, do you know what? There is the one thing to mention about the Bills. Against a Jets defense we thought wouldn't be the worst in the league, they went for over 400 yards of offense. LeSean McCoy put that team on his back, 156 total yards, 110 of them on the ground.
I love that guy.
The Bills, from an offensive perspective, will challenge some teams this season, but they are still very much in the mix of the worst teams in the NFL as they rebuild again for about the fifth time in 6 years. Matt Sherry, any final thoughts, sir?
Can't wait for week two.
It's going to be great.
Great final thought.
Do you know what we haven't done? We haven't done the Thursday Night Football preview, which we normally do on this show, but I'm aware that Ollie has to leave.
It's Bengals Texans, isn't it? I mean,
two teams with a massive point to prove, basically.
Yeah, it's absolutely a huge game for both teams already in the season, just because of the nature of the horrifying losses that they both endured in week one. So I think for that purpose, it's actually a huge game. But I would guess that Houston is the clearly better team of the two, and the one that isn't a complete shambles, and the one that I think is proud enough to bounce back properly, will win that one.
Ollie, any final thoughts from you, sir?
Yeah, I think Bengals lose that one, and then they go on a bit of a losing run. We'll see that will be the end of Marvin Lewis before the end of the season. He is on borrowed time, my friends. Borrowed time.
Bang! Ollie hits it with a hot take to end the show. Great stuff, mate. Our party, don't forget, check it out on Twitter, check it out on the website, gridiron-magazine.com. Touchdown trips. You've seen how exciting it is to watch games in the US. Go on a trip yourself, save up, and do it with Ben Mortimer, because he will get you the very best deal. Guys, thank you for joining us on the show. Thank you to everyone that listens and supports us and gets in touch on Twitter, etc. We love hearing from you, so get in touch again. We'll be back later in the week with a Thursday night review, a weekend preview. We'll have fancy darlings, everything else involved as well. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
Opening week, and we should get more people opening playing week. This week. But week two looks bloody awesome as well.
Falcons. That's Packers at Falcons. Live on TalkSport from 1 a.m. Monday morning.
Have you got a cold now as well as Jerry?
Sync up our coverage. You get Kevin Kugler and Jason freaking Taylor. Forget what Sky are offering you. You want to listen to our coverage whilst watching the game on the TV.
100%.
Or just listen to our coverage. I'm really sorry to Falcons fans and Bears fans. That was a really big game. I did miss it off in my attempt to make sure that Ollie could get to work on time. Jets Bills, it was a football game. The Bills are top of the AFC East after week one, which is ludicrous. No, do you know what? There is the one thing to mention about the Bills. Against a Jets defense we thought wouldn't be the worst in the league, they went for over 400 yards of offense. LeSean McCoy put that team on his back, 156 total yards, 110 of them on the ground.
I love that guy.
The Bills, from an offensive perspective, will challenge some teams this season, but they are still very much in the mix of the worst teams in the NFL as they rebuild again for about the fifth time in 6 years. Matt Sherry, any final thoughts, sir?
Can't wait for week two.
It's going to be great.
Great final thought.
Do you know what we haven't done? We haven't done the Thursday Night Football preview, which we normally do on this show, but I'm aware that Ollie has to leave.
It's Bengals Texans, isn't it? I mean,
two teams with a massive point to prove, basically.
Yeah, it's absolutely a huge game for both teams already in the season, just because of the nature of the horrifying losses that they both endured in week one. So I think for that purpose, it's actually a huge game. But I would guess that Houston is the clearly better team of the two, and the one that isn't a complete shambles, and the one that I think is proud enough to bounce back properly, will win that one.
Ollie, any final thoughts from you, sir?
Yeah, I think Bengals lose that one, and then they go on a bit of a losing run. We'll see that will be the end of Marvin Lewis before the end of the season. He is on borrowed time, my friends. Borrowed time.
Bang! Ollie hits it with a hot take to end the show. Great stuff, mate. Our party, don't forget, check it out on Twitter, check it out on the website, gridiron-magazine.com. Touchdown trips. You've seen how exciting it is to watch games in the US. Go on a trip yourself, save up, and do it with Ben Mortimer, because he will get you the very best deal. Guys, thank you for joining us on the show. Thank you to everyone that listens and supports us and gets in touch on Twitter, etc. We love hearing from you, so get in touch again. We'll be back later in the week with a Thursday night review, a weekend preview. We'll have fancy darlings, everything else involved as well. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
Hello, you're
Horse Ramble Daily, where we'll be covering all of your horse needs. And there's more. Every day during the Cheltenham Festival, Betway are giving you the chance to win £50,000 in the free-to-play or to win game. Head to betway.com to play now. Up next, more horses. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Full terms apply. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.